Наша задача, как Паша сегодня объяснил, будет представить миссионеров от Америки, которые жили in and from America. И те, кто не понимает, ну, хорошо по-английски, как Паша уже объяснил, там Ваня будет сзади, Остапенко. И начнем. Если можно, свет тоже, пожалуйста. I'll go ahead and start. So I'm going to be presenting about Jim Elliot. Jim Elliot, he was a missionary in Ecuador. So I'd like to start from saying Elizabeth Elliot, the wife of Jim Elliot, she wrote a book titled Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliot. So in it, she starts by writing, the life of a man who professes to be living in God must bear the stamp of Christ. And then she quotes from 1 John chapter 2, verse 3.
Я прочитаю на русском.
1 John chapter 2, с 4 стиха. «Кто говорит, я познал его, но заповеди его не соблюдает, тот лжец, и нет в нем истины. А кто соблюдает слово его, в том истина, любовь Божия совершилась, и сего узнаем, что мы в нем. Кто говорит, что пребывает в нем, тот должен поступать так, как он поступал». He who says he abides in him ought himself also to walk just as he walked. And so these are the words which were written by in the Epistle of John around AD 90, and they pretty much embody the radicals of Jim Elliot in his life. And so in this presentation, we'll take a look at Jim Elliot's life story, his background, his missionary work, and how it can relate to us today. And I don't know if all of you guys can see it. On the bottom right corner, there's his famous quote, which reads, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And this will be realized in his own life later.
Я переведу. Тот не безумец, кто думает то, что не может удержать, кто дает то, что не может удержать, чтобы приобрести то, что не может потерять.
Next slide, please. So Jim Elliot, he was born in Portland, Oregon, to a Christian family of four, to parents Fred and Clara Elliot. And on the 8th of October of 1927, and he grew up in a Christian family, and at 6 years old, one time he said to his mother at night, he said, now, Mama, the Lord Jesus can come whenever he wants. He could take our whole family because I'm saved now. And Janie, she's too young to know about him yet. So even at a young age, he was already familiar with Jesus. And moving on with that, he went on to Benson Polytechnical High School where he studied architecture around August 1941. And he remained a good Christian even till stepping into Wheaton College, where he decided to pursue his major and get a degree in Greek. And why Greek? He said, Jim said he believed the knowledge of Greek would greatly aid him in translating the Bible into a primitive tongue. Also, during his lifetime in college, he went to a student missionary convention where he learned about the Huarani Indian tribe, which was located in South Amazonian region of Ecuador. And also, during his college years, he meets Elizabeth Howard, and he falls in love with her. And, you know, Jim, he was this kind of guy where he was saying he was all about being single and celibate. And oftentimes, he would quote from 1 Corinthians chapter 7, where he was saying that being single was a gift. But even with this, he told Betty, Elizabeth, that he had a calling. He was to go to Ecuador. And so him and his friend, Pete Fleming, they take a trip to Quito, Ecuador. And next slide, please. So in Quito, Ecuador, they spend a year where they were learning the Spanish language. Followed by that, they move to Shandia Mission, the station over there, with the purpose of evangelizing to the Quechua Indians. And over there, he actually started translating the New Testament into the Quechuan language. And throughout that time period, he was joined by four other couples, which are seen in the images over here. His friend Ed McCulley from college, and two other missionaries, which were in local areas of Ecuador, and as well as a pilot. And the pilot will become pretty important later on. And also, he ends up marrying Elizabeth Howard in 1953. She flew in to work individually at the mission station. And Jim ends up telling her that, "I won't marry you until you learn how to speak Quechuan." So he gave her kind of a challenge. And so we see five couples, just starting out their families, they become united towards one goal and one mission. And also during that time period, they end up meeting a Huarani woman. She ran away from the tribe, and she teaches them a little bit of the Huarani phrases. And why did she run away from the tribe? And I'd like to tell you a little bit about that. Next slide, please. The Huarani people, they were called the Alcas. Alca is savage in the Quechuan tongue. The Alcas, they were located in the Amazonian region of Ecuador, as seen on the map. And they were pretty much hunters with poison darts and spears. And as you see on the bottom right, they rarely wore any clothes. And that's how they were mostly walking around. And violence was so common amongst them that pretty much 6 out of 10 people would get speared in their tribe. And if you'd ask one of them, be like, "Hey, what was the name of your father?" They would be like, "Oh, he was so-and-so, and he got speared right here and right here, and his guts fell out there and there." And pretty much it was so common, and everyone was, they lived by the motto to be spear and live or be speared and die. And an anthropologist actually studied them, and they believed in equality of all people and in self-government, which we'll see that might play a big role in some of their decisions later on. And so, next slide, please. Once they meet these people and hear of them, they, with the pilot, Jim's friend, they one day fly over the region, and they happen to spot an Alca village with the Quechuan Indians helping them spot it. And so what they decided to do was make contact with the natives, and they were doing so by dropping off gifts for a period of 13 weeks. And actually, during that time period, one time they actually received a gift back. And they were so excited, they got out of their planes, they ran towards the basket, picked it up, put it back into their plane, opened it, and they see that inside is a live parrot. And we see on the bottom left, Pete and Jim right next to each other, as well as the pilot holding that live parrot. And from that moment on, they started to make a plan of how to minister to these people. So the five families, they go and spend Christmas together, and they make plans. And so on January 6th, they fly out once more on their plane, and they land on a strip of land called Palm Beach. And the Indians, they actually noticed the plane. And three of them came towards the Palm Beach. And as seen over here, the men, once they landed on Palm Beach, they started setting up camp. And the three Indians that came, they were really, really curious about these foreigners. So what they did was they had lunch with them. They presented a model plane, and they took a lot of pictures with them. And on the top right, we can see one of the Indians, Nenkiwi. He was eating one of the burgers that they brought along with them. And Gimare, she was very curious in investigating what they call the wooden bee at the plane. And so after that, they felt like they had successful contact with these people. And however, the story continues on here. You see, Nen Kiwi, the man on the other slide, his first wife was speared, and his second wife he drowned himself, and he marries another, and he decides to marry Gimare. But the family clan, they did not approve of this. And so when they came back from the beach and talking with the foreigners, Nen Kiwi, he had to lie to his family clan and say that they ran from the foreigners who wanted to kill them. And so the tribe agrees to spear the foreigners instead of themselves. And not knowing this, the missionaries, they fly out again Saturday of January 7th. And this time they plan on staying overnight. And they are completely not aware of the turmoil that's going on in the tribe. And so Sunday morning comes, and Nate, flying on the plane, he spots about 10 Alka Indians walking towards the beach. And so he gets really excited. He informs the other missionaries. He radios to his wife, and they start preparing. They eat lunch, and they get busy with building their jungle house. They wanted to show and demonstrate to the Indians how to build an airstrip. And actually, while they were building this airstrip, they started singing a song. And I would like for Brother Val, if you can come up, for us to sing parts of this song, the song that they sang practically minutes before their death. This was a Christian song written by Edith G. Cherry. She wrote it before she was 15 years old. And she had a sickness, and these five missionaries, they memorized her song, and I would like for us to sing and Brother Zhenya to also play on the piano for it. At least stanzas one, первый и третий куплет. Если можно, пожалуйста. И свет. So minutes after singing the song, the five missionaries, they were ambushed and they were killed by the Alka Indians, by the savages. And even though they had guns with them, they did not shoot, because they said, when they were preparing, they said that they are not ready for heaven, but we are. And so a national radio reports started sending out, and telegrams to the relatives of them missing. They went viral, and they got national attention. And a search party with the Quechuan Indians was organized, and they found their bodies in the river. And their death their death, it made a segue to the gospel, for the gospel to prosper. Because after the dust settled, the Hurani woman who ran away from the tribe, she invited the wives to go with them to live in the jungle. And the wives, at first, they did not want to go, for they also thought that they would be speared to death. But 3 weeks passes and they agree to go, and when they come to the jungle, they were greeted by the same men who speared their husbands, this time with regret. And Dayume, the Hurani woman who ran away from the tribe, she ended up teaching the tribe every Sunday, and the missionary woman would also teach her every Wednesdays. And Elizabeth Elliot, the wife of Jim, she ended up staying for quite some time with her daughter on the top right. And in the middle over here, we see an Alka Indian who actually speared Jim Elliot. And later on, he gave a testimony at a meeting, and he said, "I have killed 12 people with my spear, but I did that when my heart was black. Now Jesus' blood has washed my heart clean, so I don't like that anymore." And on the right, far right, we see two Alka men, which are now transformed, are baptizing Nate, the pilot. They are baptizing his daughter. And so what I would like to say from this is, firstly, how radically their lives changed from the gospel that was preached to them, the information. But I'd like to point out that Jim, he was similar to us. He went to high school, he played sports, he competed in college. But Jim, he had a goal. The things that he did, the bodily exercise, was for missionary strength. The Greek degree was for learning languages and communicating well. And similarly to Jan Gus, he, at early moments of his life, he was ready for the last life's moments. For in college, he wrote these words, "Consume my life, God, for it is thine. I seek not a long life, but a full one like you, Lord Jesus." And so I would like to say, many of us here go to college, go to high school, we study, we have particular skills and skill sets and various knowledge. Now I'd like to say that we might not know yet how God will use our skills, our knowledge, and our studies, but we must be ready when the time comes. And I'd like to leave you with the quote from Jim Elliot, which he said, wrote in college, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Тот не безумец, кто дает, что не может удержать, чтобы приобрести то, что не может потерять." Аминь.